Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union. Offering a full range of financial services, MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. Stop by one of its 7 branches or go to mecu.com for more information. We are going to look at the state of our country. A lot of interesting things are going on. And the question is, how do they all meet? How do they all dovetail? And do they? I was looking at a poll this morning, a poll that put out from Media Matters for America. And it's really interesting. You see that President Obama's numbers are sliding. Sarah Palin's poll numbers are strengthening, according to this, in a poll that was taken. That his poll numbers are still around 47%. But Palin's favorable ratings are now at 43%. And in America, we know that one of the things that happens in our country is that part of the political impulse, the anger of America, when it comes to the problems with the economy and what people face, it comes up in what we call historically populism. And sometimes that takes on conservative populism. Sometimes it's more of a radical progressive populism from the other side. But there's an anger building at Wall Street. Employment is up at 10.2%. And that's just the official unemployment statistics. If you read all the others, it's closer to 17 to 20% of the unemployed stop looking for a job and the vastly underemployed, maybe even beyond 20%. People are fearful of what's going to happen with their jobs. People are laden with debt. We have $800 billion of debt in America, $800 billion that's held by China alone. China owns $800 billion of the American debt, which is set at $2 trillion. Right now, it's not hurting America, but it could very well hurt us. And we are afraid to invest in our future. We're afraid to invest in our children's future, which means we are afraid to pay for it. And what does all that mean? I'm going to ask you all what you think about the state of America. Do you think we're going in the right direction? Do you think we're going in the wrong direction? Last October, there was a poll that said 36% of Americans said we were going in the right direction, as opposed to 52% who think we're going on the wrong track. What does all that mean to you? I really want to hear your thoughts at 410-319-8888, or write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. We are joined in studio by Bill Berry, who is Director of Labor Studies at the Community College of Baltimore County in Dundalk, right?
Absolutely.
Absolutely, he says.
Kevin. Proud
from Dundalk.
Absolutely.
And Kevin Dayhoff will be here shortly. He's making his way from Westminster. Be here in just a few minutes. He's former mayor of Westminster and columnist for Tentacle.com. He was a Republican mayor of Westminster and an interesting thinker. 410-319-8888. Bill, I'm going to do something unusual here. Let's go right to the phone. Somebody's calling in to challenge what I said already. So let's hear what he has to say. Do you mind?
You betcha.
410- Your Palin-esque comments. 410-319-8888. Chris, you're on the air. Talk to us.
Hi, how are you?
Well, welcome.
I'm calling to challenge, you made the statement, but it's not so much what you say as the poll and the nature of the poll itself.
Mm-hmm.
Because why are we comparing the president to Sarah Palin? I mean, at what point in her presidency did she have these ratings? Wait a minute, she's never been the president. Okay, so let's compare her as the governor. Wait a minute, she quit her job. So why is it even relevant to compare her to our current president? I don't see in the comparison, or what is the subconscious point that I'm just trying to figure out where that's supposed to take us.
Okay, let me posit something to you, and then you can have your comment. I'll let Bill Berry comment, and when Kevin walks in the room, he can comment on what we just said. The why I thought it was significant. It's insignificant in terms of a presidential race for me. You know, when you look at people running for president, Palin versus Obama. Obama just blows her away. But what it's indicative of to me is the anger in America about our economic situation and where the country is going. And to me, what Sarah Palin represents in that is the anger bubbling up from a lot of white middle class and working class America that is very unsure about its position. Very nervous about where the country's going, and it is personified in her quote-unquote rogueness, which may be a media rogueness, but nevertheless, that's how it's being pushed. That's why I think it's significant. Significant of what it says, not because of directly comparing Obama and Sarah Palin. Chris, what do you think about that?
I understand. My thing is the poll being taken. Not so much that you brought it out, because as the radio host, it's thrown out for people to pick it up and put it to the people. My thing is, why is that poll even taken? The people who took the poll, the questions that they would have asked the people they were polling, I think it's to incite a certain... We talk about the reaction of the people to the economic times. This is still a class-based issue. The people... We are being stoked to follow the people who want us to follow them. But Sarah Palin is, I just don't see her relevance in the relevance in comparing her to the president, other than to stoke to put these dividers in between people, the women, the black people, the white males, to keep dividing people and see who can get more into their corner. I think we're still going down the same lines that we've been going down as far as just, you know, getting a leader to get behind, as opposed to just standing and saying, wait a minute, why are you even asking me this? She's not relevant.
Bill Barry, what do you say to Chris?
Well, I say part, excuse me, I agree with him on the first part that he made, that this is really a class-based question. And you look at how workers respond to issues and activities. I think one of the problems that he alluded to here, though, is that people are looking for saviors. They're looking for someone to follow. And I think that's a mistake. I think people need to look at themselves. I think and recreate organizations from the grassroots level. I think there's too much discussion about waiting for the government to do something for us or pressuring this 435 people in Congress.
Mm-hmm.
I think the other thing is polls are really deceptive. I always have as a rule of life, it's not what you think, it's what you do. And it's easy for people to sit home and kind of express opinions. One of the concerns that I have is that with all of this awful stuff that's going on in the country, and I just heard the statistic coming in that 23% of homeowners are so-called underwater. I mean, the hemorrhaging among my students and their families.
Right.
And I teach the traditional working class people who are basically better off because they still have jobs, they still have union protection, is that there's not more of an uprising. You know, you'll get 100 people out to argue about health care, but in the 30s, there were just tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of people really organizing, moving, creating unions for the first time in industrial situations like General Motors. And I think the question is why people are not angrier. Why they're not doing more about this anger. And the last time I was on the show, we talked about immigration, and they take their anger out on scapegoats. You know, it's the immigrants, it's the this, it's the that. Clearly, the Sarah Palin group takes their anger out on the civil rights movement and the kind of wealthy people. But I don't see people moving as much as you would think they would, considering how bad the situation is.
Well, I mean, people, it seems to me that, I mean, there's no place for people to move to, or there's more, in other words, we see a situation here where people almost throw their hands up. You see the government bailing out Wall Street, and that's what a lot of people are angry about, even people mm-hmm. where they support Barack Obama, don't support the Democrats, support the Republicans, don't support either party. People are, independents are upset about money that has been funneled into Wall Street and nothing being funneled into the economy. It's like we see America's crumbling infrastructure, but we're not willing to put the money into rebuilding the infrastructure and putting people to work.
Well, there's a disconnect between what people want and making it happen. And I think the political system and the large political party, the Republicans, are really the obstacle to that, because they are the status quo as they think of it. And there is no status quo. Nothing is going to stay the same. And we've seen that over the last couple of years. Dramatic, rapid change, and part of a global economy. And it's the people, it's the companies, it's the organizations that can adapt to that change most quickly that are going to move forward. And so I think people need to stop. So much of their anger is channeled into the political system. And now it's, well, we're going to wait till next year, or we're going to wait till 2012. You know, those 5 million people without jobs, they can't wait till 2012. They need to have action now. You know, we need to have like the bonus army marches and things like that, where people really assert control and create new organizations and new institutions.
Let's go back to the phone, James. Chris, we appreciate your call. You've thrown some discussion out here for us to wrestle with. 410-319-8888 about where you think America's going and what we should do. Robert in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Hello, Mark. This is Robert Bird. How you doing?
Oh, welcome.
I guess I'm trying to follow up on the comments of the person you were just speaking to. I mean, that's my concern now. The right organized these crazy, almost fascistic rallies, and the question for me is, what does it take for us to organize a popular, progressive, democratic movement? Your friend here said something about the organizations in what is it, 1930s and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, because people talk about what FDR did, but I doubt he would have done much as he did if there hadn't been a labor movement, or that Kennedy and Johnson, or maybe Kit Johnson, whatever, who are given so much credit with regard to black civil rights. If there hadn't been no mass movement, I'm not even sure we'd have a civil rights law in 1964. The question for me is, what would it take, or what do you think it would take, to get the disinherited and the dispossessed and their allies to mobilize a kind of movement which will, in fact, compel, if necessary, the government to concede single-payer national health care, decent education for everyone, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, what do you think would be needed to help bring this about? Whatever it is, I'd like to be a part of it.
Well, let me ask you this question. I'm Kevin Dayhoff. I'm curious about the kind of Republican perspective. And actually, he's an independent more than a Republican, even though he was Republican mayor of Westminster. And it just shows we need a transportation system in America, so I guess we can get here on time. Because when you try to drive traffic, you get stuck. 410-319-8888. And talking about Robert's question, let me throw this. Maybe part of it is there's a passivity in America at the moment, a sense of helplessness, and maybe it's because so many Americans, A, don't want to take personal responsibility for what's going on, and we sit passively in our living rooms getting fed kind of all the pablum, watching television, doing whatever it is, and rather than kind of getting up and doing something. Think about what would have happened if we have all these toys to placate us at the moment, and we don't – and there's no organization to go to. I mean, there was an anger in the 30s because – people were just beginning to build the labor union movement, so it was something new and people were passionate about fighting for their rights. It happened in the 50s and 60s because there was segregation and people wanted to end segregation. People fought to end that. And people like Schwerner and Goodman left New York and their comfortable middle-class homes and ended up dying in Mississippi, but people were willing to do that. And we're talking about 2009. This is not 1959, 69, or 39.
Well, interesting that Robert is a guy that I would love to meet. I would suggest you, Robert, you start going up and down your street, talk to your neighbors, because the real trick is to get people involved who have not been involved before and give them some direction. I have an article I often pass out to my students from March. It's called Feeling Too Down to Rise Up, and it's by a sociologist in New York called Sudhir Venkatesh. But he talks about blogs and radio call-in shows as the obstacles to creating a movement. And he looks back at all the different kinds of movements and says people have really just lost the ability to work with each other, to engage in that personal contact and the kind of debates back and forth. And so it really comes from guys like Robert, or people like Robert, starting right where they are, going right next door, right in their workplace.
But on the other hand, especially the conservative talk shows have galvanized people out. And the bloggers, I mean, Iran, the revolution was fueled in many ways by the internet, by bloggers, by people, on Twitter. And that's what they were doing.
Well, there's no question that last year the Obama campaign was tremendously successful. And I often say to my students, like them, don't like them, learn from what they did with new technology to motivate people. Not just sending out emails, but really getting people moving and putting them together. And we can certainly use those technology.
Because for our listeners, why do you think that we're not seeing more and more people upset about where we are? I mean, many people are saying now, I think that the number I read was that 30% of all Americans or more have somebody in their family who is unemployed. 1 in 6 workers are currently unemployed or underemployed in the United States of America. 410-319-8888. Kyrell, in your car, you're on the air.
Hi, Mark. How are you? How are you doing?
I'm well. Welcome.
Thanks. I guess my comment actually kind of tied back to what the last caller had said about why these things, you know, why people really aren't getting out there like you and your guests seeing the thing that they should. And really, for me, it just kind of breaks down to we are a more atomized society than what we were in the 30s and the 60s. We've been told that, you know, the one outlet that we have for change is through going to the polls every 4 years, and, you know, once we pull that lever, then, you know, change is going to happen. And that's been put into us for a long time. And so we all believe that the change is suddenly going to happen within us or within how we act as individuals, when really it takes a collection of people to make any real change, but we're just too individualized to act collectively, if that makes any sense.
I think we are. Everything has become segmented in America. What we watch mm-hmm. on television, at my age, and I guess Bill's as well, when you were growing up, there were three channels, and everybody kind of watched the same thing. Now we're all very separate in terms of what we see and think and do.
I'm old enough to remember when we didn't have TV. I remember the TV coming into the house, and it was a completely different relationship that people had with each other. And this sociologist, Venkatesh, talks exactly about that. He just observed people walking down the street. And I've seen it. You think people are crazy because they're talking to themselves, but they're not. They're having a cell phone conversation right. with somebody else who is 1,000 miles away, but I'm standing right next to him, and I could be invisible. And I think the caller who said people are atomized are exactly right. And I think we have to rethink how we deal with people, recreate the kind of communities that have been destroyed by the economy, the interstate highway system that is holding up the other guest. But it does start within each of us. The change we want to see, we have to be, as the phrase goes.
410-319-8888 is the number here. And Mike, you're on the air.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening, Mike.
I'm going to try and speculate about why there isn't the movement that we all think we deserve. And I think I don't think it makes the slightest bit of sense to blame the television. I love my television, but I would fight this damn system to the death. It ain't the television that's stopping me. I don't know what to do, and I'm going to speculate. I think there's this tacit assumption in this discussion that the progressives make the movement. I think that's absolutely false. I think the economic crisis is intractable. And we have to look, the cause of it is permanent unemployment caused by electronic technology. And the permanently unemployed are a slow mass to get started. And that's what we're waiting for. But they have nowhere to go but to fight this system, because this system will never give us jobs, ever. It'll never bring back the good old days. Whether they were good or not, we could debate. But that it's that those days aren't coming back in any case, I think we can prove. And somehow or other, we have to do what we can to popularize the reality that this technology, that we need a society corresponding to the economic production by electronics. It's fundamentally laborless, which means we need to give ourselves income whether we're working or not.
Bill?
Well, I think he raises a great question. We've been talking around it, is why isn't there some kind of a larger protest movement? I had a call Saturday from a woman in our neighborhood who is not a Democrat or Republican, since I've been active in the Green Party. She always calls me. But she was ranting and raving about the healthcare system and why aren't we going to do something to keep the government from taking it over? And we started talking, and I said, you can't just stay where you are. I said, I don't think the plan that's in Congress now is any good at all. But the idea that the government in and of itself taking something over is bad when she's on Social Security, I think we need to create a popular movement. And as I said, it's easy to be against something. And the Sarah Palins of the world and the Glenn Becks, they're all against something. And what are they for? Well, they're for the founding fathers, whatever that means. I mean, this is a kind of mythical statement. But being for something and saying this is what it is, just as this gentleman was talking about here, trying to visualize what a new society would look like, what would a society of full employment look like and how would it operate, is more complicated. But we have to take that challenge on because people in the 1930s took it on and were successful.
I mean, even with healthcare, though, the argument hasn't been made about what a public option or what a single payer really means. And it, as one of our single payer advocates said in the show a few weeks ago, she said that, look, it's a pass-through system. It's just an insurance system.
Right.
It doesn't change the doctors having their own practice. It doesn't mean every doctor works for the government. It means it's a way to pay for healthcare and then begin to deal with how to dampen down the costs. But first you got to get people insured, then we can dampen down the costs.
Well, there's no question that a single payer would knock the price down by about 30%. I just saw in the paper last week, William Jews got an $18 million buyout from Blue Cross and Blue Shield. You know, everybody who has Blue Cross and Blue Shield is paying for a piece of that. And they estimate 30% of the insurance companies are just advertising executive salaries, stuff like that. And I often use the figure of, when I talk to people about healthcare, of $5,000. I'm paying. My employer and I pay $14,000 a year for my health insurance. You knock 30% off that, you got some money.
Oh, look.
Another $1,000 that we're paying in taxes for uninsured people, it's a lot. And if you have to buy your own health insurance, you're really stuck.
My small little company, the Center for Emerging Media, a nonprofit company that I run that produces a show and Anthony McCarthy's show and does other work, our health coverage is going to double in January. It's going to cost me twice as much to pay for my and my employees' health care as it did last year. That's insane. I mean, it's just utterly insane.
And people don't know how much it is. I mean, I was watching YouTube a couple of weeks ago, Glenn Beck ranting and raving about healthcare costs. And he says, well, I have a company. I'll give everybody, instead of buying their health insurance, I'll give them $5,000. Well, guess what?
That doesn't help.
That barely drop in the bucket.
Pardon my French, he's just a buffoon.
But he's a persuasive buffoon.
A persuasive buffoon.
As people like George Wallace were. If you ever watch the old, it's just a certain charisma that some of these people have. That, unfortunately, is directed, I believe, in the wrong way.
Let's go right to the phones at 410-319-8888. Iris, you're on the air.
Hello. How are you all doing today?
Welcome. We're doing well. How are you doing?
Good. I am calling to say that I'm only 28, but I've now officially been in the movement for 10 years. And it's wonderful. It's a beautiful thing to be a part of. And you really can get stuff done on a small scale. But it's also hard. And it's sometimes there's long periods of time when you don't see change. And it's a lot easier to eat potato chips and drink beer.
Where are we going?
And it's a lot more accessible. Anywhere you are, if you're pissed off, you can get some chips and some beer and feel a little bit better. Now, your insurance may go up because you're all overweight and your liver's all crazy. But I think that the fact that, I mean, I've heard programs on WDAA recently that talked about the obesity epidemic and childhood obesity, and you know it's a real issue, and the fact that stuff is so in our faces, it's so easy to placate yourself in this society, whether by turning on the TV or putting a popsicle in your mouth or whatever.
Iris, let me very quickly ask you, when you say you are 28 years old and have been in the movement for 10 years, what do you mean by the movement?
The grassroots struggle to do things ourselves and rely less, as little as possible, on bosses of all stripes. And I think the caller who called in and said that the movement can't be pushed forward by progressives was 100% right. And that's a lot of the issue, is that there's progressives who want to fight, and there's middle-class, working-class people who know that a fight needs to happen, but are dog-tired from trying different ways, and beer is cold, it's a little fizzy, and it's so much nicer than trying something else that won't work, because the beer works every damn time.
Thank you so much. Good to hear your voice.
I hate to sound, a young person sounds so cynical, though. I mean, you have to have hope, and you have to have vision. And I'm quite a bit older than she is, and I love my beer, but you got to take care of business.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of ideas about how to make these things change in our world, and I think that, let me take a short break. Let me say to Tracy in your car and Chuck and Leo, please hold on. We're going to come right back to your calls. We hope that Kevin Dayhoff will get out of traffic and get here so we can join this conversation, so we have a little one side and the other going on. So Bill Berry is here, 410-319-8888. Tracy, Chuck, and Leo, please hold on. We're going to come to your calls as soon as we return and look at our country and what we should do about it and your thoughts on that. Stay with us. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner. 410-319-8888 is the number here. We're talking about the state of America and what we think we should do about it, where we should go as a culture and as a community. Bill Berry's in the house, Director of Labor Studies for Community College of Baltimore County in Dundalk. Kevin Dayhoff is stuck in traffic. Poor guy. We really hope he gets here because he's an interesting guy. He's a former mayor of Westminster and columnist for thetentacle.com. 410-319-8888.
And the only person we're missing is Howard Beale.
Howard Beale?
To stand up and say, I'm mad as hell. Mad as hell, open your windows.
Let me get to the phones. Leo, Chuck, Tracy, in that order. You called in. Let's go to Leo on Bolton Hill.
Hello, Mark Steiner.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm wonderful. How are you guys?
I'm what? Great.
I am an old line freedom fighter. Civil rights.
Is this Leo Burroughs?
This is Leo Burroughs, Jr.
All right, Leo Burroughs and I were in civic interest group doing civics back in the 60s.
Congress
together.
Of Racial Equality, that's Walter right. Carter, and the whole nine yards.
That's right.
Civil rights activism and human rights, we must continue the struggle, although there are those who will tell us that it's over. We have an African-American president, Barack Obama, and we no longer need to do that. That's just nonsense. We have the greatest threat to our liberty as black people and as white people than we've ever had. And that is, I'm talking about an accelerated technology that promotes disunity and division. You know, we've got so much technology, we spend a lot of time tinkering with devices of all stripes and kinds, computer chips in our behinds, our heads light up, phones light up, bells ring, and the jobs are sent overseas. And, you know, that's not a mistake. That's a conscious and deliberate effort to continue the enslavement of American people, the middle class, the working people, the poor people in general. I'm talking about the unanimity that exists among the Democratic and Republican Party in concert with the military-industrial complex, with big business, that allows our jobs to be sent overseas to the demise, to the destruction of the people who live in this nation. It's absolutely unconscionable, and we've got to continuously strive to bring about a revolution in this country, a revolution in thinking that speaks to a third-party direction and economic empowerment for working people and poor people. So the struggle, you know, the beat goes on, but we're not at a point in time where we can be... Well, I'm eternally optimistic, but I'm telling you, we're up against tremendous forces in the media and with respect to the technology that divide and conquer. And they do a great job of dividing and conquering and keeping people who would otherwise form coalitions from coalescing.
I in many ways that's right. I think one of the things that we're afraid to talk about is, and I talked about this today with some people on my way here to the show with one person, and we were talking about the idea that the rise of corporate power in America is more intense than it has been since the early part of the 20th century. And the divide that's created in our country and the inability for us to get anything done is that roadblock, whether it's healthcare, whether it's infrastructure, whether it's whatever it is, or the ability to do things, to live even more simply. In other words, if I want to buy raw milk, this might sound silly, but if I want to buy raw milk, I can't unless I go to the farm and buy a piece of the cow. Then I can have whatever I want. I should be able to have any relationship I want with another human being, buy what I need, and make that transaction. But we can't, and it's controlled. Everything is controlled from the top, and we are just kind of – all of our liberties are kind of being narrowed down in many ways.
And have been. And I think the – you talk about going back in time. I think it's more like the period of the 1870s and 80s with the robber barons, because not only is the corporate power enormous, and it's global. It's just not in this country. I think forget thinking about countries anymore, because the corporations don't. And fortunately, some of the unions are starting to look at that. But the culture says this is okay. It's mm-hmm. okay to have $100 million. It's okay to have five houses when some people have none. And, many of us grew up as children of people who lived through the Depression. They didn't believe that. They didn't have that culture. And it took a concerted effort and control of the media and the new technology and stuff like that since the 1960s for these wealthy people to turn the culture back around. So now that they're regarded as the highest moment of the evolution of society, and that it's perfectly okay for some people to have hundreds of millions of dollars while other people are sleeping under bridges. And that's a fundamental cultural change that we've got to get to.
So your thoughts, folks, 410-319-8888, 410-319-8888. We lost Tracy. I'm sorry I couldn't hold on, Tracy. Let's go to Chuck. You're on the air.
Good evening.
All right, Chuck.
Instead of complaining, I'd like to put forth a solution.
Okay.
And it would be called A Working America by Working American.
Amen.
What it would be is a council set up of individuals who have been in the labor force for a minimum of 20 years, predominantly family-oriented people who have families, but also some who do not, so that they can have a voice. These people are going to always speak for the working people in this country. It doesn't matter about the ethnic backgrounds or the gender or things like that. They are concerned about keeping their fellow people working and addressing, first and foremost, the needs of the working families, and then second, the needs of the single individuals. You say, well, why would it be working families and single individuals? If the working family is addressed first and foremost, you'll bring forth generations of working people. Now, of course, we want entrepreneurs, but right now we're concerned about jobs. So when you have that first, you're going to have, you're always thinking about jobs for the future generation. The problem that has been going on is we are controlled by people who are in the power structure, and we're taught to follow them as workers. So when they decide they don't want us to work, we don't work. When they decide they want to send work overseas, we don't work. We need to follow people who have our interests in common. If we're going to be followers, let's follow people who have our interests at hand. If we don't want to be followers, let's take the lead and have a council of working people for working people.
Well, I think in some ways it means that you've got to start bringing a lot of stuff home to America. Not that we want to be isolationist, which we cannot be isolationist in a global economy, in a world that is much smaller in terms of our communications, making us closer in terms of our communications ever before in human history. But we got to start bringing some of these things home and investing in America, and not just investing in wars and other things overseas. We have a $2 trillion debt to pay off in America. And we have to pay that debt off if we're going to grow. And the reason when President Barack Obama went to China that he could not renegotiate with them is they hold $800 billion of that debt. And we have to invest in America so we can take America back in many ways.
I mean, some people are complaining that there's no more American empire. I mean, it's very clear that China controls us now rather than the other way around.
Or at least controls a piece of us and a big chunk of us.
Well, large and growing. And they're very shrewd about it. But I think Chuck has got the right idea. I think the thing that's hopeful is so many people have good suggestions and solutions. And I'm sitting here thinking, why don't we all get together somewhere and start really trying to put these things together? Because I find often people are so fragmented. They have a little group about the war. They have a little group about the environment. They have a little group about something else, as if all these issues are unrelated and there's no center to it. And what we need to do is put together a comprehensive movement that's going to cover more of this stuff and bring in more people. And it's very clear that whether you're 28 years old or you're Leo Burrow's age, your age, that there are people all over who see this as a major challenge that we have to face today, not wait till next year's elections or the 2012 presidential election. We got to do it now. We got to start.
410-319-8888. Bill Berry is here. Kevin Dayhoff has been stuck in traffic, which is a shame because it would be good to have this libertarian conservative thought on this program to wrestle with where America should go. But Kevin will be here again. 410-319-8888. Rush, you're on the air. Hi, Rush, you're on the air. You there? Rush, you there?
Greetings, Mark, to your guests. Mark, I'd like to go back to this polling business for a minute because I'd like to know what your guests would respond. If we conducted a poll on January 21st of this year, and we asked Americans, how many of them thought that by January 21st of 2010, Obama would have solved all of our problems? I think polling today shows how schizophrenic our country has become. Because when you look at Obama, especially Obama, he's been one of the most transparent of politicians we've had in a long time. On the campaign trail, what did they call him? No drama Obama. So we knew he wasn't confrontational, that he wasn't going to pick up the cudgel and go out and attack people. He would try to build consensus. Secondly, we knew on the campaign trail, before I pulled the lever to vote for him, that he was going to go for health care with a public option. And down the line, I mean, so I'm saying that he's not a surprise. He's not an enigma. He's not somebody that hasn't tried to do what he said he was going to do. It's just that he hasn't gotten the support. I think a lot of us who pulled the lever for this man have left him stranded out there on an island and just now throwing rocks at him.
No, I think that, right, I think people who are shocked about where we are wrong to be shocked. I mean, President Barack Obama is who he says he was, and that's who he is.
I just don't think he's provided any leadership at all. I think on the health care, if you said to somebody, what is his vision for health care, I don't think I could tell you. It's a little bit of this, a little bit of that. And I think the idea of trying to build consensus, and I think you go back in history to Roosevelt's first 100 days. Roosevelt said, we have a crisis and we got to bulldoze right on through. And he did. And I think Obama is concerned of the consensus is dragging him down. Nothing is happening. And unfortunately, I think one of the consensus is to send more troops over to Afghanistan. And I think that is fatal. I don't think people voted for him to expand the war and to spend $1 million per soldier, which is a figure I saw, on sending troops over there. When that money could be spent here, we have people to put to work, infrastructure, all those issues. And I think an issue of how the government spends money is crucial. I also think, to go back to this caller, the idea that a savior is going to lead us out is a mistake. You don't follow a person. That's not healthy. And I would say to the audience, they missed a great performance by Mark on Saturday night as Eugene Debs. But one of the quotes that I often use from Debs, as he said, I wouldn't lead you into anything because then somebody else could lead you out. And you have to think for yourselves and do for yourselves.
410-319-8888 is the number here to join in this conversation. As we go back to the phones here, we have just been joined by Kevin Dayhoff, man stuck in traffic. We've got to, might as well let you have a little bit to say, Kevin, before we open the phones again. So let me see what we got left. Cynthia And Tyrone, we're going to come to your calls next, but let's hear the voice of Kevin Dayhoff, who we've been waiting for. Kevin,
well, it's great to see you. We've been traveling. You know, it's sort of indicative. You're still in economics? Well, it's sort of indicative of what the economy's like these days. Getting anything accomplished is pretty difficult.
It's true.
Yeah, it's a real malaise. I mean, I've been on the road almost 2 hours to see you.
That's why we need a public transportation system to get people here even quicker.
Oh, I'm a big fan of public transportation. That's definitely an order. Either that or you need to move the radio station out to Carroll County. You'd love it out there.
Let's go to the phones, 410-319-8888. Tyrone, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, evening, Mark.
Welcome.
And great show as usual. There was one thing I noticed about this country, and it's in the mess that the prior administration and before has started, and what this one is inheriting, is that those who are entrenched in power, they're going to fight like hell to stay there. And the mindset has to be, okay, you got to be just as willing to fight and fight for the long haul for them to relinquish it. Because like Douglas said, power concedes nothing without a demand. And the fear factor, I think, is what stymies a lot of people in this country. I mean, because I can say it for myself as a young 32-year-old old black brother who is unemployed.
Oh, yeah.
Looking for work, a grad student, trying to do something. It's stressful. And then you got those folks who are up in houses just trying to lock it down by, you know, they decide who to do what. It's like innovation is like once you get it, it's like it ships somewhere else. We have to keep the innovations we make in-house for, I mean, at least have the roots firm. And people in this country got to really wake up to not just change. I mean, we can't have a status quo, even though it's this thing. You can't have people just following saying, okay, it'll get better. They're good. Not when the current mess dictates that most people, that this economy with the bailout, they're not so good. Change has to come, and change is almost always slow, but it has to be radical in introduction. But it has to be phased in slow, but not pigeon slow. It's like people in power need to understand that your power is not always guaranteed. It should be like a shell. I mean, you don't take out the people at the top automatically. You take out the people who are just close or right under them. So they're like, okay, I can't stand like this all my life, and I can't dictate this all my life. Change has to come, and people need to be very, very vigilant. And those on top need to know that they ain't going to stay there for so long.
We have a history in this country of really not turning people out of power very often. Because the way our system votes and people become entrenched and they never can be moved. But there's an undercurrent in America from all sectors right now that is very upset about where we're going as a nation. And it's seen, before we go to our next caller, Kevin Dayhoff, on and I don't know what your side of the fence is because you're a pretty independent thinker, though you're a Republican governor of mayor of Westminster for a period. That the anger I was saying earlier is kind of wells up in America as a populist anger, and it can be seen as conservative or it can be seen as a more progressive populism, but it's there.
Yeah, I think it is there. Simplistically, I often explain it as America at this point in time is one-third, one-third, one-third. One-third is going to vote for liberal policies no matter what. One-third is going to vote for conservative policies no matter what. But that middle third continues to get larger and larger. And that's the decision-making third right there. And I think that one-third is where both the Republicans and the Democrats need to focus. And that one-third is becoming extraordinarily disenchanted with the malaise that we're in at this point in time.
See, I would think that there's another statistic in you're talking about voting. Only about 50% of the people in the country are registered to vote. Mm-hmm. So when you talk about a third, you're not really talking a third of the whole population. I think there's huge numbers, millions of people out there who haven't figured out how to make their voices heard.
And that's a fair point.
I don't think it's worth it.
They don't. I mean, when we ran it for the city council, and about 12% of the registered voters turned out.
Yeah.
And the registered voters, at least in Northeast Baltimore City, which includes this campus, are about 50%. And so you're talking a minuscule number of people making political decisions. And yeah. they may be divided, Kevin, a third, a third, a third.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a huge numbers of people out there who are off the screen at this point, and they're trying to figure out how they're going to, and they're the ones who are suffering.
Yes,
because
yeah, very much so.
Political registration is always tied to income. And they're the ones who are being dispossessed, and somehow they're going to figure stuff out, and we'll see what they do. But they tend to be an unseen force.
Bringing that disenfranchised portion is critical for the future of the country.
Right.
We need all hands on deck. Yeah.
Let's see what our listeners think again. 410-319-8888. Neil, in your car, you're on the air.
Hi. Thanks very much. The gentleman's last comment, he kind of stole my thunder. But
that's all right. Go ahead. Take it back.
I mean, I've been voting for Change to Believe In since Dick Gregory. You know, he had a paperback, Write Me In. It was incredible.
I remember that.
It made a lot of sense to me. Exactly. You know, it was like 35, 40 years ago. But, you know, the point that I was going to make is that we are surrounded by technology and diversion and capitalism and social structure and classism. I just got off the inner loop on the west side of the Beltway here around Baltimore, and the technology was so oppressive. The only thing that kept me straight was being on hold and listening to the conversation. It's the truth of it is that we don't think of America as a democracy. We don't think of America as a political system. We think of it as an economic system, capitalism. We have patriotism. There's a lot of jingoism around subjects that have nothing to do with what the previous speaker was saying, that we need to vote. We need to be political animals as individual men and women. And for some reason or another, the public schools or six classes when you're in sixth grade or whatever failed, and we haven't picked up on it because the one-third, one-third, one-third of the 50% that participate it's the freeze is on, you know? It disables and dumbs down and dulls the political animal in us that we need to have. And we need to, because of that, I think we go to these extreme expressions of political, individual thought like Sarah Palin or the John Birch Society or whatever. I mean, people have talked about the history of the civil rights movement and et cetera, but, that's what I think. I just think I'm looking for someone, a leader, you know, who will, in a long-term process, get us back to that 100% franchise where there is a one-man, one-woman vote, and that's the strength. I mean, words like diversity sometimes gloss over that idea or promote it in a kind of sideways fashion, but I think that's it, and I sorrow for that, and if America ever had that in the, you know, at some time or another, I don't know, Eisenhower, some golden age or something where people actually voted and politics was grassroots. And I'm starting to just kind of ramble here.
There was a time in the country when larger percentages of people participated in the political process.
Very much so.
And that's I think people felt that they actually had a kind of a control more than we have at the moment. And that has dwindled as power seems to be consolidated in fewer hands.
Well, it's also intentional by those in power. They don't want you to participate. That's why they set elections at off years and in odd places to make sure that they're going to be able to stay in office.
Well,
they gerrymander. If you look at the congressional layouts of Maryland, it's unbelievable. It's very, very difficult to be a member of a non-incumbent party and have a chance to get elected.
Right.
What I was curious about is they asked the previous caller what is out there that's going to be compelling and persuasive to re-enfranchise folks. I mean, when you even – I'm not sure what percentage of the population voted, but somebody is riveting and electrifying as Barack Obama, and I still think the voting percentages were relatively low.
Yeah.
And that's sad because people need to be engaged, they need to be involved, but we need to convince people that getting involved is going to make a difference. It's going to make a change. And people aren't convinced of that at this point.
But I also think it's convincing them not to just kind of turn on every 2 years or 4 years. This is a 365-day-a-year involvement because changes are going on all the time and changes can be made all the time. And I think the mentality, well, we got to wait till the next election, is fatal.
Well, the interesting thing is I thought we were going to discuss a little bit about the 2010 elections in the fall, but I tell you, between now and next fall huge changes can occur. We may be looking at a very different economy. We may very well be looking at very different politics by then, because engage, adapt, and overcome. And I believe that what we're going to see are a lot of changes coming up.
Let's hear our listeners at 410-319-8888. Cynthia, you're on the air.
Evening, and thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
I've heard some very interesting conversation. And I'm one of the folks that would like to see a major change in this country. I'm an average income. I'm 56 years old. And I have a deep concern for people who are less fortunate than I am. I have a job. I have a roof over my head. I have a car to drive. I'm good and good health.
Mm-hmm.
But there are many out there that do not afford those blessings that I have. And I want to see the blessings spread it. We have to, when President Obama was running for president, there was an outcry for a change.
Right.
And just like the gentleman just got through saying, we have to keep people involved with before the election. And so when we come to the time of being prepared for the election, we can really make a sound choice of who we're going to put in the office. And I'm not saying that President Obama isn't, but where are his people who make that cry before the election to change America? And we need to start in Baltimore, find a way. We can start in Baltimore, a small coalition of people getting together, pulling together, say, do you want to see the country change? Then it will spread. And it's going to have to be someone who I think about the celebrities getting, coming together to sing the song, We Are the
We Are the World.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
We Are the World. And they come together because they see a cause that has to the world has to focus on. So what we have to, I think, in my opinion, and here in Baltimore, we can start something if it's on the corner with three or four folks saying what we think and getting making the cause be known. Speak about it constantly. Have some kind of forum where people can come and voice their opinion.
Go ahead. I'm just going to talk because I only have 30 seconds before we have to go, but I think your call is right down to the grassroots.
She's at the forum.
At the grassroots.
She's at the forum where all these questions can be raised.
I think I'm going to vote for Cynthia.
Yeah.
Kevin Dayhoff, we'll get you a little earlier next time. Get you
yes,
back
sir.
In this conference. Good to see you.
Yeah, it's great to see you.
Bill Berry, thank you so much for coming in as well.
Oh, thank you, Mark.
Thank you all for writing in and calling in and making this show what it is. And we'll have more conversations about this, broad and focused, about where this country is going. To let your thoughts be aired here on The Mark Steiner Show on WEAA. And The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland State Mortgage Late Don't Wait program. For more information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555. Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. We're produced by Justin Levy, engineered tonight by Brian Boone. Our interns are Judith Lloyd, who is working the phones, Brian Boone, who is on the boards, Richard Good, and Gay Pinder. Our theme music is by Will Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again, podcast any of our past shows, hear new additional interviews, visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And for Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by MECU, Baltimore's credit union, and the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development.